Ein Freund meiner Freundin wohnt dort und er erzählte von fürchterlichen Erschütterungen der ganzen Gegend. Alle Gläser und Fenster zerbrochen. Diese Zerstörung von Brücken ist doch total sinnlos. Damit kann die NATO eigentlich nur beabsichtigen, die Bürger von Novi Sad zu schädigen. Die wissen doch, dass das Militär in der Lage ist, in weniger als einer Stunde eine schwimmende Brücke zu verlegen, wenn sie aus militärischen Gründen wirklich eine brauchen. Ich befürchte einfach, das ist der Auftakt zu ähnlichen Zerstörungen in Belgrad. Hoffentlich täusche ich mich. Samstag, 3. April 1999, 5.20 Uhr. Heute, 0.45 Uhr, sind NATO-Missiles im Zentrum von Belgrad explodiert. Das ist der erste Luftangriff auf das Zentrum von Belgrad seit dem 6. April 1941, als die deutschen Nazi-Flugzeuge Belgrad bombardierten und damit den Beginn der späteren Okkupation markierten. Die Cruise Missiles explodierten bloß ein paar Meter neben der größten Geburtsklinik im Zentrum von Belgrad. Alle Säuglinge und ihre Mütter wurden sofort evakuiert. Niemand hätte gedacht, dass die NATO sowas tun würde. CNN hat natürlich sofort auf das serbische National-TV umgeschaltet und das alles ausgestrahlt, mit all den nett vor sich hin brennenden Gebäuden. Aber sofort die Übertragung abgebrochen, als die Evakuation der Geburtsklinik zu sehen war. Und bis jetzt weiß niemand was von möglichen Todesfällen. Ich kann es einfach immer noch nicht glauben, dass jemand den Befehl gibt, das Zentrum einer europäischen Hauptstadt mit 2,5 Millionen Menschen einfach zu bombardieren. Ich kann einfach nicht glauben, dass so ein Idiot, der diesen Befehl gibt, dieselbe Luft auf dieser verdammten Erde atmet. Dienstag, 6. April 1999, 1.26 Uhr. Auch gestern wieder, ca. halb 5 Uhr früh, die NATO greift Belgrad an. Wenn ich mir die offiziellen Pentagon-Statements anhöre, wird langsam klar, es geht tatsächlich darum, den Serben das Fürchten zu lernen, wie es irgendwo hieß, und nicht um das Treffen militärischer Ziele. Und wenn sie das versuchen, dazu Folgendes. Gestern fielen Bomben auf eine Kaserne in Zvestara, im Osten von Belgrad. Ich kenne mich bei jugoslawischen Armeeeinrichtungen überhaupt nicht aus, aber Zvestara, das kenne ich wie meine Westentasche, dort bin ich aufgewachsen. Aus meiner Schule konnten wir die Soldaten in dieser Kaserne sehen. Es ist ein 2 Quadratkilometer großes Areal. Schießstände, Sporteinrichtungen, Schlafsäle und ein Speisesaal. Nicht mehr und nicht weniger. Mein Cousin aus Kroatien hat dort vor vielen Jahren seinen Militärdienst geleistet. Der ganz normale Militäralltag. Aufstehen um 5, essen, laufen, schießen, marschieren, schlafen. Und jetzt geht es also so, eine 700.000 Dollar Cruise Missile auf so eine Kaserne gerichtet und dann den Speisesaal zerstören. Die Erdäpfel und die Zwiebel lagen wie geschlachtet am ganzen Areal herum. Das einzige wirkliche Opfer dieses Angriffs war übrigens meine Volksschule. Das sind jetzt alle Fenster kaputt. NATO, von jetzt an nehme ich es persönlich. Donnerstag, 6. April 1999, 6.14 Uhr. Das war nun eine besondere Nacht, eine ganz besondere. Zuerst um Mitternacht attackieren die NATO-Flugzeuge Aleksinac, eine kleine Bergbaustadt im Südosten von Serbien. Das Ziel war schlicht die Stadt selbst. Das Spital ist ernsthaft beschädigt, 12 Wohnhäuser sind dem Erdboden gleichgemacht. Nicht ein einziges militärisches Objekt wurde getroffen, ganz einfach, weil es da gar keine militärischen Objekte gibt in Aleksinac. Bis jetzt hat man 5 Tote und 20 Verletzte gefunden. Um 3 Uhr dann wieder ein Angriff auf Novi Sad und ratet mal was, ja. Die letzte noch benutzbare Brücke über die Donau ist zerstört. Diesmal hat die jugoslawische Luftabwehr offensichtlich einmal beschlossen, es reiche jetzt und ein Flugzeug abgeschossen, bevor es seine Bomben werfen konnte. Der Pilot landete mit seinem Schleudersitz irgendwo in den Vororten von Novi Sad. Gestern sah ich noch im Fernsehen all die anderen zerstörten Brücken und Eisenbahnlinien in Serbien. Und langsam Langsam beginne ich zu begreifen, was die wollen. Die bereiten tatsächlich eine Okkupation vor. Kosovo zuerst und dann vergessen sie, was sie gesagt hatten und besetzen gleich alles. Das wäre dann die dritte Okkupation Jugoslawiens durch ausländische Truppen in diesem Jahrhundert. Halt, sagt mir jetzt ja nicht, das ist alles wegen Milosevic.
Der Computer, it's a big computer. Sorry, text
time. Die zufälligerweise in diesem Land wohnen, zufälligerweise zu diesem unglücklichen Zeitpunkt und unglücklicherweise dieselbe Luft atmen wie dieser Arsch von Diktator, der als einziger sicher nicht an einer NATO-Bombe sterben wird. Hat da irgendjemand was von humanitärer Katastrophe gesagt? Oh boy. Ich vermute, das wirkliche Ziel eines Angriffs letzte Nacht war das Armeespital, das aber seit Beginn der NATO-Angriffe leer steht. Aber der Pilot verfehlte sein Ziel. Du armseliger Idiot vom Pilot. Das Armeespital liegt an der zweiten Straßenkreuzung, wenn man vom Bahnhof kommt, nicht an der ersten. Dort nämlich liegt das St. Sava-Spital, eine Herzklinik und Rekonvaleszenzzentrum für Herzkranke. 100 Meter neben diesem hat der Bomber seine 900 Kilo Monster abgeworfen. Sonntag, 11. April 1999, 4.26 Uhr. Kürzlich las ich im Internet, Tony Blair selbst hat klargemacht, dass der Krieg, Zitat, gegen Milosevics Serbien nicht länger bloß eine militärische Auseinandersetzung ist. Es ist der Kampf zwischen Gut und Böse, zwischen Zivilisation und Barbarei. Na, dann ist das folgende wohl ein Beispiel für Zivilisation. Die Črevena Zastava-Fabrik in Kragujevac wurde getroffen. Diese Fabrik versorgte 38.000 Menschen mit Arbeit. Also haben diese schon vor Tagen begonnen, ein lebendes 24-Stunden-Schutzschild aus Arbeitern einzurichten. Das war die Top-Meldung zu Beginn des Krieges.
Okay, so welcome again. Willkommen hier bei dieser Diskussion im Radio Kulturhaus. Wir werden Englisch sprechen, aber nicht nur Englisch. Das Thema, in wie vielen Sprachen wir diese Diskussion durchführen werden und wie wir das versuchen werden zu koordinieren, kommt gleich. Ich beginne mal Englisch als der Lingua Franca. Welcome all of you here, the guests who just arrived from Belgrade, what, an hour ago. It's an honor for us to have you here. It's an honor for me to be able to introduce them. My name is Raimund Löw. I am a correspondent of Austrian Radio and Television. I've been in Moscow, in Washington. In my earlier youth, I've been quite often in the old Yugoslavia, and at that time, I also learned the language that at that time was called Serbo-Croatian, and which now I'm told doesn't exist anymore. Unfortunately, I can't speak it anymore, but this is to emphasize that I have a connection to Yugoslavia and to the Balkans. And I perhaps also have a connection to the internet, which is our second theme, because I've been correspondent in Washington at a time when all the American media had been pages going on the World Wide Web, the internet, and I tried to convince my colleagues in Vienna, this might be a story, get into that, and I saw that it was really very difficult. So what we are going to discuss today is a combination of these two elements. We are going to discuss a show on Kunstradio, a historic show on Kunstradio, which was aired on April 29th, of the last year, which combines these two elements, which combines the politics of one of the hottest, most complicated areas in Europe, the politics of the Balkans in the moments when bombs fell on Belgrade and when Albanians were driven up into trains and trucks and kicked out of Kosovo. And on the other hand, the new media and the new life of radio, maybe also television, in the internet, in the World Wide Web. And we are trying to discuss how these two meet. And they met on this day in a historic show of Kunstradio on April 29th. And this is a CD we're going today to discuss today. The discussion we have today is not only taking place here in this room, but it's also on the web, it's on the internet, and we have a chat going on at the same time. And if somebody intervenes through the chat, Bernhard Leubner, who is sitting over there, where is he? He will give us the questions and he will transmit to us the intervention coming from the chat. Show we are discussing, this historic show from April 29th, was done in and was on the basis of a collaboration of Kunstradio with B92, which is an icon of the independent media in not only Belgrade, not only in Yugoslavia, but in the Balkans at all, and in Europe. An independent radio station that for many, many years had provided tens of thousands, hopefully also sometimes hundreds of thousands of people with uncensored information, which was closed down during the war and continues on the internet now today. We may hear more about the fate of Radio B92. And Gordon Paunovic, who is here sitting to my left, during the war came to Vienna and made this show here in Kunstradio on April 29th in collaboration with his colleagues in Belgrade through a live audio stream which was on the air in this historic show. He'll tell us about it in his first intervention. Let me present to you the guests we have here on the panel. Gordon, I mentioned already, he was used to be music director of B92 and is an internet artist, audio artist, who is intimately connected to this microcosmos of alternative media in Belgrade. We have Jasmina Tešanović, who is sitting here to my right, who is a writer, a journalist, an author, and the boss of a women's movement's editing house in Belgrade, an activist of the women's movement in Belgrade, and she figures very prominently in this show with a diary she wrote during the time of the war. We have Gerfried Stocker, who is sitting here on the right of to the right of Jasmina, who is the managing director of Ars Electronica in Linz, which is the Ars Electronica being, for those who don't know it, being the center of the center where arts and high tech get combined. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. We have here Veran Matic, who also came from Belgrade this afternoon, who is former editor-in-chief of B92 and the head of the Association of Independent Media in Yugoslavia. We'll talk about that and the importance of independent media later. And we have Ivan Ivani, who is a veteran of the Yugoslavian intellectual life, who has been for many years, has accompanied the movement, the political movement of the left in Yugoslavia, who accompanied Josip Broz Tito as his main translator, and now lives in Vienna and is an to many of you might be known for his remarks on television in the print media during the war, his interpretation of the political development. So this brings me to the question of language here. We are going to discuss, the lingua franca is going to be English, but not all of us here are fluent in English. So we'll have Veran speak in Serbian, and we'll have Lydia translating Veran from Serbian into English. And she translates now, as you observed she's translating now to Veran from English. So this is one level. We have a second level. This is Ivan, Professor Ivani, who is going to speak in German and Serbian. He's not. He will do his remarks in German and then translate them himself into Serbian for those of our friends here who don't who are not able to follow German.
So, mich niemand verstehen soll, dann spreche ich Ungarisch.
I'm sure we have many other choices, yes, but that is the way we are going to proceed. I hope you all agree. And I would very much like to ask Gordon to start, to present his CD, to tell us how it was when he was sitting here in the studio communicating with Belgrade and what his aim was when he did this show on April 29th, 1999. Please, Gordon.
Apart from the facts and data that you can find on the sleeve of this CD, I would like to emphasize two angles which somehow created this CD as it is now. One angle was projected by Kunst Radio, by Heidi Grundmann and Elisabeth Zimmermann and other Kunst Radio people who've been collaborating for a really long time with sound and radio art and personalities from former Yugoslav territories. So in this new situation with the bombing in Yugoslavia, from mails that I got at the beginning of the whole situation, it was quite clear that they've been looking for some way to help or to show solidarity with the people who've been stuck not too far from here. I would like to remind you that Kunst Radio had a collaboration with people like Arseniy Jovanovic and Ivana Stefanovic and other projects since early or mid-90s, like Horizontal Radio, where artists from former Yugoslavia participated. So it was, for me, it was quite obvious that this was the right moment to show once again that there is something beyond this black and white picture that was presented to all of us by global media. And it was just a name to remind everyone about lives of those people who lived in Belgrade or some other towns in Yugoslavia in a completely new situations and who already had creation and art behind them as a proof of their thoughts and opinions on situation that was going on. That was a first angle. Second angle was my personal angle that the beginning of the bombing caught me outside of the country, outside of Yugoslavia, and for me it's hard to say, was it a sort of a bad conscience about not being there with friends and families and colleagues and everyone else, but I mean for me even a year and a half after that it's not easy to rationalize while I was here and not there. I mean, I got lots of advices not to go there, not because it was like dangerous or something like that, but because like radio was in a very specific situation and it probably demanded more help from me outside than I could participate if I was in Belgrade. So I, at the end of the day, I decided to stay outside. I was on my holiday when the bombing started. I arrived back to Europe on the 13th of April to Budapest, and a few days later I had a call from Kunst Radio with the idea work together on something that turned out to be other voices. A broadcast that would incorporate on one side many pieces of radio and audio art which were produced in a collaboration between Kunst Radio and Yugoslav artists during the 90s, and on the other hand a completely new production which emerged in first 5 weeks of bombing. So this CD is simply a sum of those two of those two elements which at the end created originally 100 minutes long radio show, radio broadcast, and which is now remixed for this CD down to 70 minutes.
Could you give us an example or two? I mean, not all of us might have listened to the show. Not all of us might know the CD. Just introduce it to what you did.
Okay. On one hand, we had we had pieces of Kunst Radio collaborators from former Yugoslavia, people like Arsenij Jovanović, Ivana Stefanović, and me. Some former things that I did for Kunst Radio. Also, we had a couple of pieces from the archive of former Radio B92, like very interesting documentary, a radio documentary, "The Only Love Song in My Language," which was recorded during 1998 in Kosovo, and which consisted very interesting elements, which spoke for itself about conflict between Serbians and Albanians, and shed a kind of a new light on it.
Then can we listen to it? If you introduce that piece, why don't we listen to it? Can we listen to it?
There's a couple of other things that I would like to mention right now, so just one minute more. Then we had some interesting live elements which came from Belgrade. There were some recordings of war soundscapes in Belgrade. I mean, sound excerpts of like one night in Belgrade during the bombing. There were recordings of sirens and alarms. Then we've been pretty lucky in establishing a internet connection with Belgrade. Robert Klein, who is chief sound engineer at Radio B92, was sitting at his home. He had a microphone outside of his window, and he was picking up the sounds from another night in Belgrade under the bombs, and he was streaming the sounds live on internet. And also we had a couple of sound works by Aleksandar Vasiljević, who's also another Belgrade sound artist. And finally, we had elements which don't belong to fields of sound or radio art. We had very interesting excerpts from internet diaries of two Belgrade persons, from Jasmina Tešanović, who is here, and from Slobodan Marković, one young guy, a Belgrade hacker and computer person, if I can use that word. So that was a whole bunch of different things, and which we at the end somehow put all together in that radio broadcast. So I would now propose to hear the beginning of the original radio broadcast, which was at the end taken out of CD version. It's a beginning of the broadcast, which includes also one essay by Veren Matic, which deals with the media in a war situation. It's called what's the name of it? Do you remember? Commandos. Collateral. Was it collateral damage? Yes. No. It's collateral damage /commandos, I think.
Okay, let's
Listen.
Other voices, echoes from a war zone. In den 30 Tagen der Bombardierung unter Kriegszensur und Repression ist der unabhängige Journalismus fast vollständig verschwunden, was, wie wir bereits vorher festgestellt haben, als ein kollateraler Fehler definiert wurde. Dass dies doch nicht nur das, also ein Fehler ist, sondern dass dabei eine bewusste Logik existiert, bestätigt die Tatsache, dass zum Beispiel der Sender B92 ab dem Augenblick, ab dem er sich gegen die Bombardierung aussprach, unter den Verdacht geriet, nicht mehr unabhängig zu sein. Es wurden sehr leichtfertig Bewertungen vorgenommen, dass nämlich diese Haltung unter dem Zwang des Regimes eingenommen wurde und dass sie ein Produkt der Angst und so weiter sei. Es sind nur wenige, die diese Äußerung als das Recht auf Meinungsfreiheit definiert haben. Das war ein sehr deutliches Signal, dass die Nichtannahme von Propagandamustern ähnliche Effekte sowohl bei der einen als auch bei der anderen Seite erzeugt. Das ist auch eine deutliche Matrix, die immer gut funktioniert. Wenn sich jemand entgegengesetzt als von diesem erwartet äußert, wird er sofort zum Verräter, zu jemandem, der pro Milosevic ist, erklärt. Die Tatsache, dass B92 bereits verboten war, hat diese Logik nicht sehr verändert. Hier kommen wir zur Definition des erwarteten und erwünschten medialen Verhaltens. Es ist klar definiert, was nicht gut ist. Das Problem der Objektivität und des Professionalismus der unabhängigen Medien wird mittels bewusst projizierten Schicksal gelöst. Kriegszensur und Verbot. Und wenn es gar zum Mord an einem Redakteur kommt, wie dies mit Slavko Churovija geschah, wird auch dies zu einem kollateralen Fehler erklärt, während das Problem der staatlichen Medien und das Problem der staatlichen Propaganda durch Bombardierungen von Gebäuden und Sendeanlagen gelöst wird. Die Bombardierung von Gebäuden hat eine sehr ausgeprägte rituelle Funktion. Keiner ist vor klugen Bomben sicher. Und die Bombardierung von Sendeanlagen hat auch eine sehr konkrete Funktion. Auf dieser Ebene laufen die Schicksale der unabhängigen und der regierungstreuen elektronischen Medien zusammen. Ihr Platz soll durch das Kommando Solo eingenommen werden. Ein altes, als Kommando Solo bekanntes Flugzeug, das mit einer hochwertigen elektronischen Ausrüstung ausgestattet ist, bereitet sich auf Flüge entlang der unmittelbaren jugoslawischen Grenze vor, um Botschaften der NATO über Rundfunk und Fernsehen zu senden und damit die Macht des Präsidenten Milosevic zu untergraben. Bis zum Zeitpunkt, zu dem dieses Flugzeug an die Grenze zu Jugoslawien transportiert werden soll, wird, wie dies am Samstag, dem 17. April 1999, der Miami Herald berichtete, das Programm aus zwei EC-130 Flugzeugen gesendet werden. Offizielle Vertreter der NATO behaupten, dass die fliegende Radio- und Fernsehstation 193 weltweit einzigartig ist. Kommando Solo überträgt täglich 3 Stunden lang Fernseh- und AM-Radiosignale in der Stärke von 10 Kilowatt und FM-Radiosignale in der Stärke von 1 Kilowatt, was von der Stärke her einer amerikanischen Station mittlerer Größe entspricht. Die Besatzung des Kommando Solo, die 11 Mitglieder umfasst, sowie eine Besatzung auf dem Boden, hunderte Männer und Frauen, die ihre Berufe als Lehrer, Fabriksbesitzer und Prediger aufgegeben haben, rühmt sich der Tatsache, dass sie die am häufigsten eingesetzte Einheit des Bereichs Luftfahrt in der Nationalgarde ist. Die 193 hat bereits an Operationen in Grenada, Haiti, im Golfkrieg und in Somalia teilgenommen. Zusätzlich zu den Sendungen, die seit dem 1. April gesendet werden, werden aus einem anderen Flugzeug auch Flugblätter in serbokroatischer Sprache verbreitet. Manchmal auch 1 Million gleichzeitig und bisher 12,5 Millionen Stück. Dies erklärte der amerikanische Marinekapitän Stefan Honda, Pressesprecher der amerikanischen Streitkräfte in Europa, aus Neapel in Italien. Obwohl es nur wenige gibt, die die Gelegenheit hatten, dieses Programm zu hören, aufgrund der Flugblätter, die dazu auffordern, diese Programme zu hören, ist es klar, dass es sich um klassische Militärpropaganda handelt, die sich nicht einmal die Mühe macht, die Botschaft grammatikalisch richtig zu verfassen. Denn fast keines der Flugblätter, das verbreitet wurde, war korrekt geschrieben. Die Botschaften selbst sind inhaltlich betrachtet naiv und können keine Wirkung, außer natürlich eine entgegengesetzte Wirkung, hervorrufen. Wenn wir wiederum zur Zerstörung der Medien und zu jenen Medien, die als kollaterale Fehler zu Schaden gekommen sind, zurückkehren, werden wir erkennen, dass damit Raum für den Einsatz des Projekts Kommando Solo geschaffen wurde. Die Frequenzen, auf denen dieses Flugzeug sein Radioprogramm ausstrahlen wird, sind die Frequenzen der beiden meistgehörten Radiosender, nämlich jene von B92, des unabhängigen Senders, der auf 92,5 ausgestrahlt wurde, und jene des Kommerzmusikradiosenders Kosava, der beim Raketenbeschuss des Geschäftszentrums Usche zerstört wurde und dessen Redakteurin die Tochter des Präsidenten Milosevic ist. Nun soll auf diesen Wellen also das Kommando Solo ausgestrahlt werden, in der Hoffnung, damit die Hörer der beiden Radiosender übernehmen zu können, wobei einerseits der als unabhängiger Sender weltweit bekannte Ruf von B92 benutzt wird und die Illusion erzeugt wird, dass durch den Raketenbeschuss auf das Radio Kosava die NATO direkt mit dem Präsidenten Milosevic abgerechnet habe und auf diese Weise nebenbei auch diese Frequenz für Zwecke der eigenen Propaganda übernommen wird.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Gordon. Before we continue this discussion, let one question. If you could, I would ask you very much to reduce smoking, because it's already extremely tense here. I don't know for the others, but we want to discuss until all could make their contribution, but the smoke is getting so tense that at least I will not survive for very long if it gets tenser and tenser in that space. So please, this is a small room and ventilation does not seem to be ideal, and we are many people in the room. Please reduce smoking. Let me ask Yasmina, your diary is very prominent in the show. Let me ask you one question. What was your feeling? Whom do you reach through that diary, and what connection do you have to the web?
I have very strong and pleasant feelings now hearing the alarm. You know, it's something that I think we made a film, and when we are, when we're showing it in people from Yugoslavia, when they hear the alarm, people are fainting, and I thought I was above that. But now, when I heard it, I kind of, I don't feel very, very okay. But I will tell you, I also wanted to refer before answering it to your question, what he was saying, that he was feeling like guilty because he was out of the country. I want to point this out, that nobody should feel guilty for staying behind or for staying out of the country. That is exactly the division line which I don't want to accept, because nobody had a choice. Those who left, that wasn't a free choice. That was also an obligation. I had a terrible schizophrenia problem. Shall I leave and save my daughter, or shall I stay behind? I was guilty towards my daughter because I didn't leave, and I was guilty towards my man if I left, you know. And after deciding on not being responsible, on not having a free choice, I said, whatever happens, if I go, if I stay, I have no free choice. And I hate all kind of division lines and political sense of guilt or judgment between the two sides. I'm not saying that it happened, but you know, I just want to point out, because when I go out of country, I meet people in exile who, and vice versa, they expect from us to be, you know, divided by this kind of decision, by a tragedy. But I think we had it both ways, you know. Well, the story about my diary is, I think something that can bring together, the two issues you were talking about, the internet issue and whatever it means, and the creative side to it, the writing and the war in Yugoslavia. This is a true story. You know, I didn't want to reach anybody. I didn't write my diary for publication. I started writing it a year before, 7th of March 1998, when the first conflict started in Kosovo. I knew it will happen someday or after also, that we'll have bombings on our territory. I knew it since 1992, when I spent 3 months in Vienna because Belgrade was supposed to be bombed, you know. So it was something that we were expecting, that was in the air. And everything I was writing for the past 10 years, not only my diary, referred to this kind of atmosphere. I'm sorry I couldn't finish my novel on Nefertiti, but I had war in my yard, and unfortunately I had to deal with that, notwithstanding my interests. And the true story is that I was actually writing it. I had a conf- computer, you know. I don't like computers. I didn't have a computer, you know, since very long. I had some kind of computerized writing machine that was enough for me for the writing process. And a friend of mine from Manhattan, a very, you know, she's living in the center of the world in Manhattan, a photographer, a philosopher. She said, somewhere in 98, she said to me, writing a letter, she said, "Oh, how boring life is here. You know, everything is normal every day." And, you know, I was just like that a year before. But then I said, you know, "Oh, how snob you are saying that's boring, because we are losing," she's a good friend of mine, I could, you know, say that to her, "we are losing here normality day per day, you know, and this is actually what war is all about, even before the bombs, you know." So I started this, writing this diary, which is called On Normality, a Moral Opera by a Political Idiot, which is me, who is me, and not my president, who is doing his job, and it's me who is really being the victim all of the situation, and not only me. And when the bombing started, I already had half of the book, and it was supposed to be published in the United States. And, you know, this was actually some kind of therapy. Writing was all a therapy for me. You know, in this specific case, it was the only normal and sane thing I could do, you know. So I was writing it. And a friend of mine from Uruguay, she is an Uruguayan writer living in Sweden, being a Swedish writer, whom I met sometime before, she asked me, "How are you?" You know. And I didn't have time to tell her how I was. So I just said, "Okay, I have this diary, I will send it to you." And I sent this diary to her. Now, what I was writing it on, she was asking, "How are you?" You know, this was something I didn't have time to follow. I was really following the survival process and what was going on in everyday life. But after some time, a friend of mine from London, living in London, she asked me, she says, "I see you're publishing your diary on the internet." And I said, no, I'm not publishing it, you know. And she said, "No, this is your diary." And she sent me a piece of diary. And I read that piece of diary, because I never read my diary. I was just writing it and sending it. And I said, "Well, this woman writes exactly like me, but, you know, our lives are exactly the same, you know, and why there's no free space in a situation of war, because the problem with wars is that they're boring and not interesting. So we're all living the same life, and everybody's writing the same diary. You know, everybody had children to buy this and to buy that." And she said, no, it's you. Because in the meantime, somebody took off my name in order to protect me. By that time, the diary was on something like 50 internets without my name in 12 languages, even Albanian, you know, and Arab. Can you imagine Arabic? You know, it was, I learned that only afterwards, you know, I didn't know it. I just went on writing without reading it, you know. I was writing it still until July 20th. It was already published in Latin America. I didn't know even that. It wasn't foul play. It was just something that was, you know, going on because... Now, at a certain point, I said, I didn't reach all the emails back because there was some problem with servers. We spoke about that today, you know. I was, you know, at a certain point, I knew that Granta was supposed to publish my diary. And they sent me a message, "Do not publish it too much on the internet, because, you know, we are an important magazine, 80,000, you know, copies around the world, will pay you well." And I said, "Of course, but I don't know how to stop it. I don't know if I'm publishing." And then I thought also that it was a very cynical way of putting it, because, you know, we're living in a complete isolation. And I said, "Okay, I fear more isolation than bombs. You know, the fact that I'm not, and I don't care if you will publish it or not." You know, the moment of isolation really made me creative, as made all those writers. Mm-hmm. And I must say that the people who were writing, I was reading many of the diaries. There were beautiful websites with diaries from insiders, you know. Most of the people were not professional writers, you know. I did feel as an anonymous woman writing from Belgrade. And I think that the best diaries written by people who were not professional writers, you know.
It's an absolutely amazing story. I mean, you send your diary as an email and losing control
absolutely
in the situation of total censorship in the country.
Yes, absolutely. It went out, but I didn't manage to get any feedback. You know,
absolutely amazing, and a story that really focuses on this contradiction and on the topic. Let me ask Veran Matic. We heard this description by Yasmina. So, what came out of Belgrade was spread all over in the world on the net. How about the public in Yugoslavia? I mean, is there an internet public in Yugoslavia? Can the alternative media who are on the net,
Do they have a space, or is it restricted to a tiny group of several hundred people who have actually access? Or is it a new part of reality?
Za razliku od Jasmine kažem da bi, ako bi bio cinik, mogao da kažem da mi je drago da se čujem sirene, ali ovde u Beču.
Unlike Jasmine, I would like to say that I am happy to hear the air raid sirens, but here in Vienna.
Ne bih naravno voleo da doživite ono što smo mi doživjeli posle uvođenja sankcija, što su i vama ovde uvedene sankcije, da budete bombardovani naravno, i pored toga što sam protiv, žestoko protiv one politike zbog koje su sankcije i uvedene i Austrije.
Despite the fact that you have the sanctions, I do sincerely hope that you will not get bombed, and I do hope that I don't support the politics which led to the sanctions and which led to the bombing, but I sincerely hope that this won't happen to you.
I nadam se da je ovo zaista promocija samo CD, a ne pripremnje, znači učenje funkcionisanju u takvim uslovima.
And I also hope that this is just a promotion of a CD and that we are not teaching you a lesson here on how to survive under these type of circumstances.
Što se tiče interneta, naš radio je prvi internet provider u Jugoslaviji. Dakle, prvi smo počeli da se bavimo tim stvarima. Znajući da internet može da se iskoristi u čitavom nizu dimenzija.
Our radio was the first internet provider in Yugoslavia, and we knew that there are many ways by which you could use internet, and that's why we started it.
Jedan od osnovnih načina za naše preživljavanje bilo stvaranje paralelnog sveta, znači na neki način virtualnog sveta u odnosu na diktaturu i ratove koje smo doživljavali u proteklih desetak godina.
One of the main ways for us to survive was to create a parallel world, so a virtual world to the one we was living at, the world of the dictatorship.
To nije bio pravi virtualni svet, to je bio između ostalog i realni, ali naš i paralelni svet onom koji je predstavljao režim Slobodana Miloševića.
It was not a real virtual world, it was parallel and it was our own and parallel to the one of President Milošević.
To je jedini bio način da preživimo i ostanemo normalni i posle toliko godina u Beogradu i u Jugoslaviji.
Only way to survive and to stay normal after all these years in Yugoslavia.
Na prvom mjestu nama je internet značio novi mediji, znači novu šansu da dobijemo nove ljude koji su pratili ono što mi radimo i da između ostalog podržavaju ono što mi radimo.
Internet was on the first place a new media for us and a new chance to find a new people who would follow up what we were doing, new people who were following the new media.
U tom smislu je u tom delu, dakle, smo bili usmereni na svet, dakle na publiku van zemlje.
And in this sense we were turned towards the world, so to the audience outside of the country.
Unutar zemlje značio nam je most između različitih grupacija koje su na ovaj način putem interneta mogli da uspostave najbržu komunikaciju.
And within the country we were bridging gaps between different sorts of groups who then could communicate via internet among each other.
Na trećem mjestu to nam je predstavljalo prodor u nove tehnologije i u nove medije koji je onako jedan zaista izuzetno širok prostor. Dakle, u jednu izuzetno u pravu svetsku razvojnu dimenziju.
This was also a breakthrough to the new technologies of the developing world.
U Jugoslaviji nema veliki broj ljudi mogućnost da, kao što je to u Zapadnoj Evropi ili naročito Sjedinjenim Američkim Državama, prati preko interneta vesti.
Not too many people in Yugoslavia has the possibility, like in some Western countries or like in US, to follow up the news via the internet.
I na tom nivou najznačajniju ulogu internet igra kao most, kao premošćivanje ili vremena ili cenzure.
And in this sense, internet is very important to bridge a gap of time or to bridge a gap created by censorship.
96. kada smo bili zabranjeni u decembru, zahvaljujući u stvari emitovanju putem interneta, mi smo prevazišli zabranu jer su taj signal sa interneta mogli da skidamo na predajnicima van zemlje i da ponovo vraćamo u zemlju, dakle preko srednjetalasnih predajnika, čime je cenzura i zabrana
In December, 9 radio was banned. Thanks to the internet, we have managed to overcome this banning decision and to, by internet, send the program out of the country, then pick the signal up by transmitter, and then get it back to the country via medium wave. And this is how we overcame the censorship.
Ljudi koji su imali pristup internetu u unutrašnjosti Srbije, štampali su naše vesti i onda ih delili po unutrašnjosti u gradovima, dakle kao nekakav bilten, kao sam izdat koji je postojao pre toga u istočnoj Evropi.
Like some is that in Eastern Europe, people who had access to the internet in the province, so outside of Belgrade, were printing out the news published on website of B92 and then distributing it around to their friends and so on.
Ljudi koji su mogli da čitaju naše vesti van zemlje su štampali te vesti i faksom slali svojim prijateljima koji nisu imali pristup internetu unutar zemlje, a ovi su to opet fotokopirali i ponovo delili kao biltene.
People who were picking up the news via internet outside of the country were faxing this news back to the people in the country who couldn't catch it via the internet, and then these faxes were copied and distributed like bulletins within the country again.
Mi smo i danas zabranjeni. Zabranjeni smo 17. maja, ali čini mi se da to u Jugoslaviji niko ne zna osim Beograđana.
We are also banned today. We were banned on 17th of May, but I think that nobody knows it in Yugoslavia except for the people from Belgrade.
Naime, zabranjeno je terestrijalno emitovanje programa u Beogradu, ali ga mi i dalje, cela redakcija i dalje funkcioniše i radi, proizvodi program, šalje putem interneta i telefona do Londona, odakle se signal diže na satelit i vraća ponovo u zemlju, a 33 radio stanice reemituju taj signal. Tako da cijela Srbija gotovo može čuti naš program osim Beograda.
The program is still being produced. It has been banned from broadcasting in Belgrade, but the news desk and everybody else are working normally, and then sending the program via telephones or internet to London, then uplinking it to the satellite, then from the satellite back to Serbia, and then it's picked up by 33 radio stations throughout Serbia, so program can be heard everywhere but in Belgrade.
Sada, zahvaljujući internetu, pravimo i mehanizme za pokrivanje i samog Beograda, bez obzira na sva ometanja i sve prepreke koje ćemo sigurno doživjeti onog trenutka kada startujemo sa takvim signalom, sa pokrivanjem ponovog Beograda.
We are attempting to cover Belgrade with our signal as well, also by using internet. And no matter how strong the jamming attempts will be, at this point we're going to try.
Ali zahvaljujući opet internetu, sve ono što mi radimo također se pretvara iz medija u mediji. Znači, na internetu možete čuti naš radio i u Real audio i u MP3 formatu, možete čitati naše vesti, možete neke vesti gledati, također pošto postoji i video na internetu. Znači, nismo više samo radio, već i čitava jedna medijska kuća koja ima nekoliko medija, uključujući i sam internet kao poseban medij.
Thanks to the internet, it's media transformating to a media, because our material can be found via internet in real audio format, also MP3 format. You can also watch some things, because there is also some video material on sites. You can also read some things. So we are turning into a real media house thanks to internet.
I, znači, sama činjenica do 94. radimo na internetu, govori o tome da bi mogli jako puno da pričamo o ulozi samog interneta. Mislim da u posljednjih godinu dana je i unutar zemlje postalo izuzetno važno i značajno, između ostalog i na internetu, odnosno shvatilo se koliku to značaj i moć može da ima, čak i u situaciji kada niste razvijena zemlja i imate veliki broj kompjutera i pristupa internetu.
It's obvious that we could speak a lot about the usage of internet because we have understood it and using it since 1994. But during the last year, it became obvious to everybody that it is extremely important to be on the internet, even within the country.
To je otprilike moj opis interneta, uloge interneta u našoj zemlji i vezan za B292. I pre nego što sad završimo ovaj prvi krug, da ne bi kasnije mi se dogodilo da prekinemo raspravu, želio bih da istaknem jednu specifičnost i vezu sa ORF-om i sa Bečom.
This is briefly about internet and B292 usage of internet, but before we continue this discussion, and I wouldn't like to interfere this afterwards, I would like to emphasize some special relations we have to the ORF and to Vienna.
Naime, u svetu postoji možda 50-ak ljudi koji su u proteklih 10 godina, može se reći, na jedan najkonstruktivniji duhovni način pomogli naš radio, onu duhovnu stranu samog našeg radija u profesionalnom smislu, znači u samom odnosu prema radiju, zvuku i tako dalje.
There's only 50 people worldwide who have helped our radio in a constructive and spiritual way, and
Znači, postoje ljudi koji su nam finansijski pomogli, postoje oni koji su nam pomogli mnogo više svojom podrškom i uključivanjem i nas i onoga što mi na kreativnom planu značimo u svetske okvire. Jedna tih osoba je Heidi Grundmann, koja nam je zaista pomagala izuzetno u proteklih 10 godina i stavlja nas je uvek u situaciju da mi sami postanemo deo sveta, ali na onaj najbolji način, na najkreativniji način.
There are of course people who supported us financially, but there are also people who supported us spiritually, and one of these persons is Heidi Grundmann, who helped us become part of the world in the best possible creative type of way. And hereby I would like to thank her for this.
Okay, thanks a lot, Veran. I can also comfort you. Okay, the show goes on air in Amsterdam. Okay, through the web stream. Okay, we're glad to hear that. Well, thank you, Veran. Just wanted to comfort you as far as the so-called sanctions in Austria are concerned. If you're here a couple of days, you'll see that it's very difficult to find somebody who actually feels any sanctions in his personal life. I at least didn't find anybody, even the Austrian ambassador in the Netherlands, who didn't get his medal from the Queen because of the sanctions, as ambassador, got it one day later as a private person. So the country is not living too badly, except of one element that we could, if we have time afterwards, discuss, which is a psychological element in the media that you had, where you had the feeling in part of the media in Yugoslavia, well, the whole world is against us. The whole world doesn't like us. The whole world is mean to us. We are alone. And sometimes there are elements of such a climate in this country too. Maybe we could discuss later about that.
But let me
I feel very, very relieved now.
Okay, great. Let me ask Professor Ivani, who is an observer of the political development in Yugoslavia, knows this relationship between a strong, seems still strong, regime, and on the other hand, an opposition, booming alternative media that seemed to be very, very lively. Now it's a year after the war ended, and the regime seems to be there. Today, the parliament in Belgrade changed the constitution to enable the president Milosevic to stay in power, what, for another 8 years or something? Unbelievable. Why is it that you have this striving intellectual life, striving democratic life, alternative media, and they don't come together to challenge politically the dictator? Please, Professor Ivani.
Das ist natürlich eine Frage, die ich mir 100-mal gestellt habe und immer wieder stelle. Soll ich das jetzt auf Serbisch wiederholen? Oder soll ich?
Und sagen Sie einen Block Deutsch und dann auf Serbisch, bitte.
Ich habe schon viele Leute übersetzt im Leben, aber mich selber halt seltener.
Noch eine Premiere heute.
Rekao sam da sam ja sebe vrlo često pitao to isto. Ich kann also nur sagen, was meine Meinung ist, ohne sicher zu sein, dass ich recht habe. Ich glaube, dass Milosevic jahrelang die öffentliche Meinung unterschätzt hat, vielleicht zu Recht. Mislim da je Milošević godinama podcjenjivao javno mnenje i to možda s pravom. Während der klassische Kommunismus, worunter ich nicht die Jugoslawien verstehe, so überaus empfindlich war auf alles, was man sagt und alles unter Kontrolle halten wollte, haben wir schon zu Titos Zeiten gelernt, dass das nicht so furchtbar ernstzunehmend ist. Dok je klasični komunizam, pod kojim ne podrazumevam Titovu Jugoslaviju, bio tako strahovito osjetljiv na svaku javnu reč, mi smo pod Titom naučili, da to ne treba tako ozbiljno da se shvati. Und tatsächlich hat diese Oligarchie, die unter Milošević an der Macht ist und die ich immer eine Kleptokratie nenne, weil eigentlich in Europa ein solches Herrschaftssystem bisher nicht vorhanden war, meines Wissens, hat ganz gut existiert, trotz einer oppositionellen öffentlichen Meinung, die den Machthabern überhaupt nicht geschadet hat. Ovaj sistem koji ja najradije nazivam kleptokratijom, jer ne zaslužuje nijedno ime nekog sistema kako je Evropi vladao, bar ja ne znam, da je sasvim lepo živeo uprkos opozicije. So hatte Milošević Land, um dieses Jugoslawien, was übrig geblieben ist, so zu nennen, tatsächlich bis vor kurzem eine große Anzahl oppositioneller Zeitungen, die wenig Menschen gelesen haben, und sogar oppositioneller elektronischer Medien, die viele Leute gehört haben, aber auf die sie nicht reagiert haben. Tako je ta naš Milošević Land, da tako nazovemo ostatak Jugoslavije, zaista imao veliki broj opozicionih novina, pa čak i elektronskih medija koji nisu mnogo uticali. Erst die Wahlen 96, 97, die Kommunalwahlen, haben dazu geführt, dass die Leute auf die Straßen gingen, um ihre Meinung, die sie durch die Wahlen ausgedrückt hatten, auch zu verteidigen. Teke 96, 97, da ne govorim sad srpski detalj, nije donela promenu. Und erst danach fing eigentlich Milošević an, zu merken, dass das für ihn gefährlich werden konnte, denn er herrscht auch weiterhin sehr geschickt, ohne eine Mehrheit zu haben und ohne einen so starken Apparat der Repression zu haben, wie ihn der Stalin-Kommunismus, gar nicht zu reden, vom Hitler-Faschismus gehabt hat. Tek je sada Milošević počeo lagano shvatiti šta to znači, pogotovo u situaciji kad on je u manjini, a nema ta sredstva represije kojim se služio Staljinov komunizam, da ne govorimo o Hitlerovom fašizmu. Ich fürchte, das wird sich jetzt verändern. Ja se bojem, to će sad promeniti. Denn er steht mit dem Rücken zur Wand. Milošević hat eigentlich keine Wahl mehr nach der Anklage in Haag und nach der Entrüstung, die ihm aus der eigenen Bevölkerung entgegenschlägt. Es geht jetzt bei ihm nicht mehr um die Macht, sondern um das nackte Leben. Und dann werden Leute, die um ihr Leben kämpfen, gefährlich. Rekao sada se to utoliko menja jer je Milošević sa leđima prema zidu, jer nema izlaza posle Haga i protiv onog što mu dolazi od sobstvenog stanovništva i ko se bori za goli život postaje opasan. Jetzt vor kurzem, als ich in Belgrad war, hat man auf einem Fußballstadion während des Matches gebrüllt, Slobo, bringe dich um. Und das haben Tausende und Abertausende gerufen. Ich glaube, das hat noch kein Machthaber, kein Diktator so gehört von einer solchen Menschenmenge, der dann die Polizei auch nichts anhaben kann, weil es zu viele sind. Stilo sam ono na stadionu kad su vikali Slobo ubise. Die Situation in diesem Augenblick scheint mir jetzt wirklich als Leser und Beobachter so, dass man einen Teil der Wahrheit in Serbien noch aus einigen Printmedien und vor allem dank B92 erfahren kann. Das sage ich jetzt nicht, weil die von meinem Standpunkt aus jungen Kollegen da sind. Koliko ja sad kao običan čitalac i posmatrač mogu da procenim našu situaciju, pored nekoliko print medija, čovjek istinu može saznati samo još iz B92, što ne kažem zato što je nekoliko smog stanovišta mladih kolega ovdje prisutno. Veran Matić hat erzählt, wie das im Lande selbst verbreitet wird. Wie breit das ist, kann ich nicht sagen. Ich wäre neugierig, wenn es genauer wüsste. Kaže, Veran Matić je objasnio kako se to širi po Jugoslaviji, koliko ljudi to zaista stiže, to ne znam, bio bih rado da čujem ako može da to odgovori, da li ima nekih ispitivanja. Denn man kommt in Jugoslawien sehr schwer rein ins Internet. Man muss sehr lange warten. Die Telefonleitungen sind schlecht. Die Provider haben vielleicht nicht genug Linien. Während ich hier in Wien verwöhnt bin und über Kabel, über Cello sofort drin bin, egal zu welcher Tageszeit, muss man sich in Belgrad schon daran gewöhnen, dass man ein paar Dutzend Mal den Anruf wiederholt, bevor man drin ist, und wer hat die Geduld dazu, und es kostet auch viel, wenn man in Jugoslawien verdient. Rekao kako se teško ponekad ulazi uopšte u internet u Jugoslaviji. Ja sam ovdje povezan preko kabla, znači odmah sam unutra sa stostrukom brzinom i u Beogradu čovjek baš treba da ima strpljenja ako hoće da čita vaše vesti u neko doba dana. Jetzt, wenn ich ein bisschen nachdenklich werden darf. Unsere Generation ist, weiß Gott, nicht die erste, die etwas Böses erlebt. Unsere Generation nie prve koja doživljuje zla. Weil ich zur Generation gehöre, die Auschwitz auf der eigenen Haut erlebt hat, da sage ich immer, das ist eigentlich noch nichts los. Ist noch alles so schön. Als ich jetzt in Belgrad war, war ich zufällig gerade im Stadtzentrum zum Abendessen bei meiner Tochter eingeladen, als der schlimmste quasi Kampf um Studio B und also auch in Direktor B92 begann. Und mein Sohn, der Korrespondent für den Standard ist, wollte absolut nicht, dass ich ins Zentrum komme. Und ich habe gesagt, mir kann nach Auschwitz eigentlich nichts passieren. Und dass ich mit 71 zum ersten Mal ein bisschen Tränengas geschnüffelt habe, das ist eher interessant für mich als schrecklich. Rekao, ko je doživio Auschwitz, kao ja to ne može da shvati sasvim ozbiljno, kad sad bejah u Beograd, upravo kad je počela gužva oko studija B, kad sam bio pozvan kod svoje ćerke koja je stala preko puta na večeru i Andrej vikao na sav glas preko mobilnog, da nikako ne dođem u centar jer je tako strašno. Ja rekao svoje ženi, posle Auschwitza mi se u stvari ništa ne može dogoditi, što sam malo nanjušio suzavca prvi put sa 71 godina. U životu to je više zanimljivo nego što je nešto strašno. Ich meine, seit kein den Abel umgebracht hat, wiederholt sich das. Das ist wohl genetisch falsch irgendwie bei uns Menschen. Otkad die kein ubio Abelja, to nekako ne funkcioniše i to je valjda genetski pokvareno među nama. Was die Bibel für eine gute Literatur ist, beweist uns gerade der heutige Abend, wenn wir an den Turmbau von Babel denken. Wo doch die Sprachen verwirrt waren, weil die Menschen auf einmal glaubten, mit großen Türmen oder Internet oder was weiß ich, irgendwie so technischen Wundern die Gesetze der Natur besiegen zu können. Rekao, kad je reč o Bibliji, što je dobra literatura, mogu ja kao ateista da kažem, valjda, kad mislim na izgradnju Vavilonske kule, to je dokaz da ništa internet i kule i druga tehnička čuda ne pomažu kad se pobrkaju jezici. Wir verständigen uns ein bisschen indirekt zurzeit, hier mal das indirekt noch sporazumevamo. Aber doch ist dieses Zeitalter, in dem wir jetzt leben und in Serbien, Serbien passiert und in Eritrea, Eritrea und anderswo was anderes, ist das die Zeitalter, wo die ganze Menschheit augenblicklich dabei ist. Ipak je to jedna razlika da ovog časa kad tu sedimo i Srbija doživljava Srbiju, Eritreja, Eritreju i šta ja znam koji još sve što njega boli, cijelo je čovečanstvo prisutno. Das ist das Neue. Jetzt kommt meine Frage, ich habe keine Antwort. Nützt das überhaupt etwas? Ist das, was ich sehe im Fernsehen, wenn es um Eritrea geht und um Afrika und andere Dinge, nur so eine kurze Nachricht, wo ich weitergehe und es kümmert mich nicht weiter, eventuell zahle ich 10 Schilling oder 1000, wenn ich sie habe. Sad se ja to zaista pitam druge, ne znam odgovor. Kad ja vidim ono što me se ne tiče, recimo Eritreju, ne Srbiju, na televiziji, jer me se to tiče što god ili idem dalje preko toga. Dam 10 čilinga ili 1000 ako imam i s tim sam stvar rešio. Und da kommt jetzt meine Befürchtung, dass je mehr wir reden, je dramatischer wir reden, umso leichter geht man dann zum nächsten Film, zum nächsten Talkshow oder wie das alles heißt, oder zum nächsten Pornofilm über. Toga se najviše bojem da što više toga ima, što dramatičnije se to prikazuje, to lakše prelazimo posle na sljedeći pornofilm i na sljedeću zabavu na televiziji.
But that is a very important point that will make me bring Gerfried Stocker in, but let me ask Veran first to answer very shortly the question of Professor Ivani. What do you have an idea, what's the audience of internet media in Yugoslavia?
Znači, mislim da sa tim podatkom nećemo dobiti nikakav odgovor. Da je glavni odgovor u stvari na pitanje koliko u ovom trenutku građana u Jugoslaviji može da čuje nezavisne i nepristrasne informacije na elektronskim medijima. Što se tiče radija, državni radio prema posljednjem istraživanju ima 1,5 milijuna slušalaca redovnih, a naša mreža ima 1,2 milijuna slušalaca, s tim što u ovom trenutku treba oduzeti 300.000 slušalaca koje ne pokrivamo Beograd, iako se vrlo brzo vraćamo u Beograd, znači za desetak dana. To je otprilike razmera što se tiče radija. Što se tiče televizije, to je katastrofalna situacija, to je katastrofalna razlika. Mnogo manju gledanost imaju nezavisne televizije, odnosno nema ih, odnosno televizije je nešto što je Milošević jako držao u sopstvenim rukama.
Mr. Matić said that he would like to offer the data about the electronic media. He said this is what counts, and according to the most recent public opinion survey, 1.5 million people are listening to the state-run radio, while Association of Independent Electronic Media has 1.2 million listeners, minus 300,000 of those currently in Belgrade, but hopefully BT92 will be back on air soon there. Speaking of the television, the situation is catastrophical, and Milosevic was very careful to make sure that he keeps his grip on the television and that independent television stations do not have too many viewers.
Što se tiče samog interneta, možemo reći da otprilike imamo 5.000 do 10.000 pristupa našem sajtu, imamo 11.000 pretplatnika, a mislim da će se sve jako povećati sada kad uvedemo servise vesti na albanskom i na mađarskom, što planiramo da uradimo. Mislimo da to u ovom trenutku je izuzetno važno, da ono što se događa u Beogradu, u samoj Srbiji, saznaju i ljudi koji govore drugim jezikom, a žive na teritoriji Jugoslavije.
And now for the data on internet, there are between 5,000 to 10,000 clicks per day on FreeB92 internet site, 11,000 subscribers to daily news bulletins. And Mr. Matić also emphasized that he hopes that the number of users will increase as B92 introduces the new services in Albanian and Hungarian, because he thinks that it is crucially important to give these people who speak some other language than Serbian also the opportunity to read the news.
Yeah. Gordon, do your figures match more or less this picture?
I just have a little bit more of statistics related to the internet consumers. In general, there are no exact figures about number of internet connections in Yugoslavia, but the last statistic was somewhere around 150,000 connections for the whole country, which is not a very big figure all in all for a country which has how many, 10 million of people? It's variable, okay, a bit less.
5 miliona plus minus, to konec yeah. nije.
Okay, so that's a total number of connections. I think this data is some 9 months old, approximately. Regarding statistics related to FreeB92 website, it also varies from normal days, like if you can count day like today into normal days, to days when something really extreme happens in the country, like the first week. Since B292 is shut down again on the 16th of May of this year, we had around 500,000 visitors for 7 days, which is really high figure. I mean, right now, average weekly statistics is around 50,000, which is 10 times less, but still pretty good figure for internet itself. We are approximately around position number 18,000, the most visited sites on the net, which is not bad for whole internet at the end of the day, I think. And also, I think we have some really, really good statistics related to audio streams, how many people visits. I mean, some of you probably knows that there is lots of hype around real audio and MP3 in terms of number of real connections, simultaneous connections. And our figures are somewhere around in the extreme situations, like the most, the highest figures around 200 for MP3 simultaneous connections, and 3 times more for real audio, up to 600, which is, as far as I know, it also comes to really better statistics on the internet, and I'm quite glad that we are able to cope with this kind of traffic, which is quite difficult for a country with a generally bad connectivity with the whole internet itself. But whole this situation really gave us a big lesson about internet users. We are dealing with 95% of our users are low bandwidth users, and we are really trying to adjust our activities towards people who have a slow connections, who don't have a cable, who has never heard of cable T1 or call it what you want. They're really sitting on a slow modems, 33.6, 28.8, even less in a peak hours. So that's why, for example, we are trying to distribute our news via email. And right now we have more users of this kind of service than direct internet users. Right now we have 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 of direct internet users per day, and between 11,000 and 13,000 of email news B92 bulletin users, which I hope anyone can really download. Anyone who can get an email message.
Let me come back to the question Professor Ivani ended his intervention with, the consequences of the internet, of use of the internet for civil society. And let me bring in Gerfried Stocker. I mean, there is obviously the public, the area of the public gets quicker, but on the other hand, does it really get stronger? If I'm right, that's the question Professor Ivani asked. What are your observations? Mm-hmm.
I think this project, Other Voices, is one of the most remarkable documents of this development into a new and modern media society that we are going. On the one side, it's a really incredibly remarkable document about this war. And I think I had the luck to listen to it live in the radio, because I was just driving with the car and, you know, driving on the highway between Vienna and Linz, and you turn on the radio and then you get into this program. And it was definitely the most impressive, not just emotionally, but also rationally, most impressive document I ever got on radio or television about this war going on against Belgrade. And it's also very remarkable for me that it needed an artist to do this, because I mean, especially when we're in an institution like today, and we have the Austrian radio here, there are so many media experts who were dealing with these problems of this war in the official media as well as in the unofficial parallel media. But it really needed an artist that achieved to create a situation that was not just describing and documenting what's going on, but at the same time really using the reality, one of the realities of this war, using it at the same time for his type of work, for his documentation that he was doing, by employing the radio here in Austria as the media of broadcast, by employing a real audio stream, by using the diaries that really became popular, that became a kind of cult during this time of this war. He was not just describing the situation in Belgrade, he was absolutely describing in a perfect way the situation of our society in this moment in the situation of having media, parallel media like the internet available. And in this moment when we probably here in Europe for the first time really recognized the possibilities that might be behind this media. And of course we should not have too much hope about all the empowerment of the civil sector and the third sector and the civil society by use of internet and the possibilities of new media. Because still it is a minority of people who are using this media until now, and within this minority we have always the minority of people who are even interested in dealing with social issues. But of course by means of this media, and I think all the events going on around your diaries, for example, or the B92 campaign, really proved that you can reach a very big audience in a much more extended way. And maybe it does not help so much, like you asked, you know, what does it help if we get this information from Eritrea or from Chechnya or from Iraq or from Belgrade. It probably doesn't help very much in a direct sense to the people in Eritrea, in Chechnya or somewhere else. But having this opportunity of getting the so-called official media and the official public opinion, and having the parallel, the possibility to get direct into the field of action and get an alternative data and information, at least helps us to identify the enemy and to identify a little bit more about the relations between good and bad, because of course that's a normal process of a media culture, that media have to polarize. Media only work if they really polarize. And even in the way of technology, we had this development from black and white to color TV. But in the mind how television is working, we are still in this phase of black and white television, in means of just putting this opposites. And I think that it really changes a lot. And you know, in this question, it is very hard to prove it in such a discussion, because here are the people who were involved in the best proof that we ever got since we have the internet, that there is definitely a possibility to enhance the power of the individuals, to enhance the power of the civil sector. And when you look at things that happened, for example, in Seattle and Washington with all the demonstrations organized against the World Trade Organization, where internet played a crucial role in organizing the opinion. So for the first time, we have, even if it's just a small chance, but we have a chance to make our own opinion management, to have our own opinion management in opposition to the so-called official public opinion management.
Let me add just one thought. During parts of the Yugoslav war, I'd been in China. And China is a country where information is still very, very important. The Communist Party wants to censor in the old Stalinist way. the economy is capitalist as much as you like, but the media is completely censored and Stalinist, except the internet cafes. And it was exactly in the time of the war that all the internet cafes had a huge boom of people going there. And we went as journalists to several internet cafes in Peking and asked the people there, what are your customers, to which sites are they going? And they said the main questions are the Yugoslav war. Yeah, that is what the people who went there were looking for. This was, you have Taiwan, Chinese Taiwan internet sites. You have huge number of Chinese internet sites from the United States. You have, of course, the English-speaking internet sites. You have 1 billion inhabitants in China, and I think 3 million people have access to the internet, which is. I'm not a technician, so I even don't know how they make it with the Latin script, so I couldn't tell you about the Chinese script. But my impression, being there and having lived in the Soviet Union when it still worked, and was that the idea of censorship is dead. Yeah? There is no sense. With the technology of the internet, censorship does not really work anymore. With a given level of technology, censorship in the old way does not work anymore. Because, as you said, people who have the technological level and the education can get the information and nobody can prevent them. I mean, the Chinese censors tried to block CNN.com. Well, a day afterwards, Atlanta puts up a mirror site of CNN, and everybody finds out about the mirror site, and the censors of the government take 2 weeks to find that mirror site and to block it, and the moment they find it, they have a third mirror site. So basically, censorship in the old way is dead. What is not dead, of course, is manipulation. It's manipulation. Manipulation is not dead at all, and for manipulation, it is, of course, if a government wants to manipulate public opinion, what kind of media it has, what's the access to the internet, who controls the media is still important. But it is not structurally different from manipulation in a democratic society. Yeah? It's not structurally different. Yeah, it's the quantities are different. But the old time when Gustav Husak reigned in Prague and you had to smuggle in Samizdat to get information to people, or was different. Okay, you can say you had shortwave radio at that time. Yeah, that puts a certain question. But, I mean, shortwave radio made it possible to get information through even in World War II. People were listening in Vienna, were listening to the BBC, but the dimension is different. So I would, picking up on what you say, I would say censorship as a mean of domination of a dictatorship is dead. Manipulation is very much alive, of course. Now the question is, what about manipulation on the internet and of cutting out realities, parts of realities? I'm observing that we all discussed here the war, Yugoslav war, in the terms of bombs onto Belgrade, because that's what we lived, that's what we heard. We didn't discuss it in the terms of Kosovo Albanians being kicked out, put to the trains and kicked out of Kosovo. May that be because on the internet, for technological reasons, this was not possible? Or am I wrong? It's a question. Does the media of the internet, did it help in Yugoslavia to understand the feelings on one side from the other side better than it would have been without the internet, or was that blocked out? My question here open to the panel.
Ja mogu prvo samo intervenciju vezanu za ovaj slučaj koji ste naveli, vezan za cenzuru eventualno sajtova CNN. Mislim da je pogrešno bilo kojoj diktaturi u strategiji da cenzuriše CNN. Upravo obrnuto. CNN pomaže svakoj diktaturi, što je shvatio prvi Saddam Hussein, pa je ostavio CNN u zemlji i dopustio da imaju uživo bombardovanje.
It is not the dictatorship which is trying to prevent CNN. It is just, Mr. Matić would like to correct, speaking of the censorship, it is CNN helping dictatorship to survive. That's what Saddam Hussein realized as first. and that's why he kept CNN within the country.
I pre kraja bombardovanja CNN, jedini svjetski medij koji je napravio ugovor sa jugoslovenskim ministarstvom za informacije, sa najozloglašenijim ministrom trenutno u Evropi za informacije, je napravio, dakle, CNN i pre nego što je završeno bombardovanje.
The only world media which has managed to get a contract with the notorious Yugoslav Minister of Information even before the bombing ended, and this contract was gotten by the CNN themselves.
Ja mislim da ovo pitanje nisam baš najbolje razumeo, ali pokušat ću da odgovorim da je u stvari nezavisna scena kosovska, odnosno albanska, imala svoj vrlo ozbiljan uticaj na internetu i vrlo ozbiljnu količinu informacija permanentno na internetu, i mislim da je to zaista jedan veliki bio iskorak u to vreme bombardovanja.
Independent Albanian scene also had a huge number of presentations on the internet, and he will attempt to try to answer what you asked, although he did not quite understand.
Radio 21 iz Prištine, čija je redakcija razorena, je također se preselio na internet iz Skoplja posle izlaska sa Kosova.
Radio 21, the premises of this radio were destroyed after the personnel left Pristina, they have moved to Skopje and then they broadcast it via internet.
Velika je šteta što Koch Editore sa svojom agencijom nisu mogli da nastave istim tempom prisustvo na internetu kao što je to bilo pre bombardovanja.
It is a shame that Koch Editore with its agency did not manage to keep up the presence on the internet as it used to be before the bombing started.
Ali je bilo jako puno sajtova, jako puno aktivnosti na internetu, doduše sa mnogo izraženijom kampanjskom ulogom, a mnogo manje novinarskom, tako da je to na neki način kompromitovalo tu vrstu prezentacije.
There were indeed a lot of sites present, but most of the activities had campaign as its main aim and not the journalistic information, so in a way it damaged the aims of these sites.
Ja u stvari kada govorim o internetu, u stvari govorim o novim tehnologijama. Nikad ne govorim samo o internetu, jer internet je deo te priče i ubeđen sam da je ispunjavano sve ono, na primjer, što smo mi radili u proteklih 3-4 godine i što smo preporučivali, dakle, da Zapad da vrlo ozbiljnu, sofisticiranu tehnologiju medijima na prostorima bivše Jugoslavije, odnosno u svim diktaturama, dakle, satelitske telefone, laptopove, videokamere, da je u stvari, da bi u tom slučaju izveštavanje sa Kosova bilo mnogo, mnogo uspešnije, mnogo bolje, a imali smo situaciju u kojoj gotovo da nije bilo izveštavanja. Izveštavani smo samo preko onih koji su uspeli da izađu sa Kosova.
When I'm talking about internet, I'm also speaking about the new technologies and what we were advocating for the last 3 or 4 years, that it was really crucially important to bring up the sophisticated technologies to the reporting on this issue. For instance, if the reporters had satellite phones and laptops, the reporting would have been much better from Kosovo, and we could only witness on what was happening from those who were leaving and talking.
Znači, ne postoji u takvim državama ni alternativni planovi za komunikaciju, ne postoji bežično povezivanje između kompjutera, između različitih bitnih lokacija. Znači, ako ste vi oslanjeni samo na klasične medije, na klasičnu komunikaciju, onda ćete vrlo brzo biti, moguće vas je zatvoriti informativno i na svaki drugi način.
And this is why it is important when you don't have wireless connections between the computers, when you're relying only to the classical means of broadcasting and doing journalism, then it is very easy to shut you down because you cannot fight against it.
Najvažnije u ovim diktaturama koje pominjete, Rusiji, u Kini, je što se dogodilo cepanje unutar, koje je onda moguće iskoristiti na različite načine uz pomoć novih tehnologija za demokratizaciju, naravno i za bolje informisanje.
And speaking of the dictatorships like the ones in Russia or China that you mentioned, It is very important that there was a breakup within, inside, and these little breakups can be used in order to use the new technologies and develop democracy.
Jedino iznutra može nešto promijeniti. Spolja se ništa ne može raditi.
Things can be changed only from the inside. Nothing can be done from the outside.
Pitao sam stručnjaka BBC-a koji je radio na osvajanju etra Rusije, Sovjetskog saveza svoje vremeno, kako su se suprotstavljali jakim ruskim ometačima. I on je rekao da nije bilo šanse da to urade. Samo su, znači, oni pojačaju svoj signal, Rusi povećaju svoj signal. Znači, sve pitanje je novca. Znači, da li ćete vi uspeti da dovoljno pojačate do onog nivoa dokle druga strana nema novca da više parira na sličan način?
Mr. Matić also spoke to one of the experts of the BBC when these experts were attempting to conquer the air in Russia and to air their programs in Russia. So the question was, how did they manage to fight the Russian jamming technologies? And the answer was, we never managed. It was just an issue of money. We would pull up our signal, they would pull up their jamming, then we would invest more money and endlessly like this.
Ali opet u osnovi svega stoji ekonomska moć i razvoj. Da bismo zaista ujednačili kvalitet informisanja ljudi na ovoj planeti, apsolutno je neophodno da se podigne ekonomski položaj ogromnog dela ovoga sveta, a uključujući samim tim i u Kinu, kada ljudi mogli da budu kupuju kompjutere, onda će vjerojatno napraviti nove pukotine. A da ne govorimo o Africi koja je potpuno nedostupna kad se pominjala Eritreja. Kako, mislim, nema ni električne struje, nema ni elementarnih uslova za bilo kakvu elektronsku komunikaciju, naročito. Znači, mislim da je to ovako nešto što je izuzetno važno reći, ali nije tema, jel' sad, ovoga našeg.
It is not the topic and the issue of tonight's discussion, but the bottom line of everything is the build-up of the economic power and development. Because if people in China had money to buy computers, they would then most probably find a way to make some other little breakups in the system, and then these could be used. Not to mention Africa and how people in Eritrea are informed. So with no development and no equality between the economic statuses of people, there is no such thing.
Well, dear friends, I see people leaving, so we should somehow come to an end of our discussion, I guess. I would invite each of you just for a closing statement and to conclude this discussion. Gordon, yeah. You wanted.
Yeah, I just
go
wanted
ahead.
To add something that could be also my conclusion. That I'm not keen on overhyping technology itself, because at the end of the day, it really comes down to a personal thing to use the technology that you have. I've heard this story about DV cameras and laptops and satellite connections so many times before, especially in the last 18 months, like how things could be changed if this kind of technology was available to people. But I would like to raise the question about personal issue, you know, who would carry such a dangerous equipment, dangerous for a government or corporate structures, depending on where do you use them, in extreme situations. If you're caught in a wartime with such equipment in your hands, I think you really don't have too much chance to survive. So it's, at the end of the day, down to your personal guts and a personal courage to try to make some sort of mission. So I'm not saying you don't do it, but it's really down to everyone's decision. You know, should we, you know, everyone has to make a decision about involvement in this kind of things. I think best side about, you know, B92 is that we still have people who are ready for this kind of challenge, but I'm really not now able to tell you how long this is going to last.
Thank you. Professor Ivani, do you want, did perhaps the story of the Chinese internet cafe somehow reduce your skepticism?
Eigentlich möchte ich nicht über China etwas sagen. Ich habe es heute mit der Bibel Zapravo neću o Kini, nego nešto mi danas se Biblija mota. Moses musste angeblich seine 10 Gebote mit einem Hammer in Granit klopfen. Das muss physisch schwierig gewesen sein, habe ich gesagt angeblich. Mojs je navodno morao ono sa tih 10 zapovesti sa čekićem u granitu da kuca. To je bilo fizički jako naporno. Später, als man einfacher schrieb, der Talmud ist schon unübersichtlich. Talmud, kad se lakše pisalo, već je bilo nepregledno. Kommen Gänsekiel, Füllfederhalter, Schreibmaschine, Guftjepero, Penkalo, pisaće mašina, jetzt haben wir Internet und was nicht alles. Es wird so schrecklich viel sein, dass wir heutzutage, um uns mitzuteilen, mehr Disziplin brauchen als je. Sad imamo internet i sva ta čuda, to je tako strahovito mnogo da nam je sada potrebno više discipline nego ikad da bismo uopšte saopštili što hoćemo da kažemo.
Thank you. Please.
Well, I'm very bad in conclusions and I forgot a major issue. What was the question? I changed so many things. But I think that, I have this feeling that related to how I consider technology, is that it gets, it goes too much ahead of emotional development in life of an individual, you know. Let's not speak about it. I think internet is very important, but it should be even more important as an abstract thing. But, you know, practically speaking, it's not really used. The percentage is so low that you cannot change anything actually in the world from the base, but only from ups, and that's not what we really want. I don't want it that way. I want a true change, you know. The thing is that we cannot cope, I think, emotionally with technology, and what he's speaking, what he said, that we actually need to develop much more the individual, you know, in order to use it creatively, because even the writing has changed, you know, all the data, how writers use more words with writing novels. And I guess because of using the computers, and I guess also some kind of truth, you know, which comes through internet, through information of this kind, has changed too, because we are not so sure, not so able to cope with technology, like, as he said, CNN and RTS, you know, our official TV, made a deal from the very, I didn't know they made it officially, but you could see it, you know, because the only pictures which came out from Serbia, from Kosovo, in CNN, were those made by our official TV, and those were falsified image, not only of us Serbs who were the aggressors, but also of the Albanians. I knew very well what was going on in Kosovo through personal, you know, phonings and that. But looking at it at CNN, at a certain point, I was wondering, was that really true? It was completely the opposite. So I mean, you know, this is my conclusion.
Thank you. Concluding words, Gaffrey.
Well, I'm in this business of promoting internet and information society now since 10 years, I think. And for quite a while it was very easy because it was mainly, you know, really fighting to get people to understand that internet might become important. And now since 1 or 2 years, also here in Austria, we have the big hype of the e-commerce. And now the most lectures I give, or the most discussions I'm taking part, are organized by institutions like the Trade Chamber or kind of a big consulting companies who try to sell e-commerce to small companies. And meanwhile, I think the most interesting challenge that we have here in a country like Austria, because, you know, it's, I mean, I didn't get anything of this war in Kosovo. I was just looking, you know, to the television, and for me this is really very, very far apart because it's just behind the media. But I think discussing the problem, what can the internet be in the future? Can we establish the internet really as a third medium for individuals, for a civil society, or can we maintain it? I mean, it's difficult to ask, can we maintain it, because I'm not so sure how much it already had been developed. So I think it's really more the question, how can we team up to get something into this development of the commercial information society that we are definitely going into. I mean, there is nobody here who can do anything about it. How can we achieve to reserve some places of us? Because I think there is a very big opportunity in this commercial boom about the internet, because this is it what will make it much more cheaper, which will make it much more available. And only because of the commercial development of the internet, we might finally come to a situation where maybe not just 20% or 30% of Austrians have access to the internet, but maybe 70%, 80%, or sometimes even 100%. And so as intellectuals, as artists here in this country, we have to look for possibilities to create spaces in there. This is really something that seems to be very important for me here in our situation.
Well, thank you very much. I think we somehow managed to connect the Yugoslav situation with the internet situation in the discussion and in the conclusions. Thanks to all the technicians here who made that possible here. Thanks to Kunstradio for bringing us together. And good night. Bye-bye. Thank you.
April 12, 1990.